Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast of Connecting Faith. Programs like this are made possible through the financial support of listeners like you. You can find out more or make a gift by clicking on the Support Faith Radio tab on the homepage. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. Looking forward to our discussion today. Particularly looking forward to spring tomorrow. Ryan, I don't know if you, you're one of those that really get excited about what the calendar says the season is. Tomorrow, first day of spring.
Well, there's been a lot of close calls with calendars, though, in the past year, Neil.
Okay.
There was that whole Mayan calendar situation.
Oh, yes. So you've lost your enthusiasm for the calendar, have you?
Well, I just think that for much of our upper Midwest and many of you friends who are listening right now, you're looking outside and feeling the crisp air.
Yeah.
And so, it's difficult to believe that it is spring, but everything is going to be okay. And I know that it's very reassuring that at least it's supposed to be starting anytime now.
This is, and I saw, I think maybe it's nationally, but I know the Minnesota governor had proclaimed it like Agriculture Day or Agriculture Week. So, which, you'd need a pretty solid plow to be out turning a little ground, I think, these days. But anyway, we're just, the thought of some fresh black dirt that does appeal to me a little bit. So anyway,
my father declared as he was traveling across the Great Plains just a couple days ago that he was seeing farmers in their fields tilling up the sod.
Yeah,
it's great news.
He was happy.
I think he had a general sense of well-being because of it. Yes, sir.
I can tell. Speaking of dads, when I was a kid, grew up in a dairy farm, so we got basically about a day and a half vacations, but all we got. But at one point, we took a vacation, went to the Black Hills, Mount Rushmore, and all that.
Yes.
Which is lovely, but driving back, we got to the South Dakota-Minnesota border, and my dad's, we'd been driving all day, of course, driving across South Dakota, as you know.
it's not a small state.
No, it's just it takes a little. So we got to the border, and my dad saw somebody out, I think, cultivating corn or beans or something, and that was it. Couldn't stop. So we plowed on all the way home. So anyway, that has probably not a lot to do with our discussion today, but it was a nice little review.
It was great.
Let's bring in my guest today, Ed Brown. Reverend Ed Brown is the chairman, he's founder and chairman of Care for Creation. And Ed grew up in the country of Pakistan as a children of missionaries. He's an ordained minister. And he has written a couple of books, including Our Father's World, Mobilizing the Church to Care for Creation. His latest is called When Heaven and Nature Sing, Exploring God's Goals for His People in His World. And we just want to talk a little bit about the wonderful world in which we live. And all across the upper Midwest, we enjoy the seasons. That's what we're going with anyway, Ed. I don't know. Are you a winter person?
Well, Neil, great. I was sitting here listening to you two chat back and forth, and I have to tell you that I'm in Madison, Wisconsin, and every year about this time I start to think, wouldn't it be great to move Care of Creation to Jamaica? and my staff say they'll follow me.
Sure. So. Given the right goals, your team will follow, so that's good. So, speaking of Jamaica, you were in Jamaica about 3 months ago or so, and actually leading a Lausanne conference on creation care, right?
That's right. Besides working with Care of Creation, I'm the senior associate for creation care for the Lausanne movement, which I assume your leaders would be your listeners would be a little bit familiar with, as the global family of evangelicals that was started by John Stott and Billy Graham several decades ago. The Lausanne movement is moving toward taking creation care very seriously and asked us to call a global consultation of leaders, which we did in November this past year, to discuss the whole question of creation care and the gospel. How do they fit together? Which comes first? And when we say creation care, are we talking about a different gospel, or does this have anything to do with the old controversies about the social gospel and so on? It was a very, very productive meeting. We affirmed both the traditional interpretation of the gospel as being for human salvation, but also came up with a very strong statement that creation care must be included in our response to that gospel. And this is all summarized in what I think is a fantastic document called the Jamaica Call to Action that's actually available on the Lausanne website.
Ed, as you talk about with the care of creation, that you're both evangelical and environmental, there's always much discussion about environment. Just let's talk a little bit about maybe just the sense of where you see us, sometimes the word crisis gets used a lot. Are we in a state of environmental crisis, or how would you define where we are today?
It's really interesting that you should bring that up. We just had a board meeting over this past weekend down here in Madison, and one of our points of discussion was a very serious question about should we use the word crisis or not. And one of our members said, works in an environmental area, and so she takes the whole thing very seriously. But she says, do we overuse the word crisis? Everything's a crisis now. Does that really convey what we want it to? Maybe we want it to be more positive. Which is one reason we Christian environmentalists more often will use the term creation care rather than using the E word, as you might say. But when it comes down to the bottom line, it's hard to get away from the fact that we really do have a crisis going on. And I don't know, there are a dozen different dimensions of the problem you can talk about.
Give us a couple of maybe some major ones, because we're in many ways, I guess our laws have tightened up. I mean, we're getting more efficient in the use of natural resources in many ways. But so, in what sense are there crisis concerns?
We could start with a very non-controversial one: the water. We know that we absolutely have to have water in order for human life to go on. We have to have water for the crops. And last year's drought may or may not be finishing in the upper Midwest. It probably is not finishing in the lower Mississippi Valley and the Southeast and so on. And the lack of water coming down from the heavens due to climate change or whatever reason has absolutely devastated an entire industry. But more than that, you go to another countries like India, where much of the agriculture that supports that population is supported by groundwater, fossil water, basically, water that's pumped out of the ground and not replaced. And the wells are going dry all across India. Farmers are going into bankruptcy and failure, and there is a real question whether India can continue to feed itself because of water. That's a crisis. We could talk about things that are largely hidden that we don't know a lot about yet, like chemicals. Chemicals in the atmosphere, chemicals in our food. There's some very frightening research being done now on what some of the very, very small amounts of pesticides can do to human biology in terms of sexual development and things like autoimmune diseases and so on. We have epidemics of these new diseases, and we don't know exactly what's causing them, but I think the word crisis is absolutely legitimate to use. And then, of course, we have the big one that I believe it's a real problem, but we don't say that it's the only problem, and that's the whole question of how we are changing the composition of the environment and therefore the direction of our climate, with things like Superstorm Sandy probably becoming more dangerous, if not more frequent, and so on. So I think it's hard not to use the word crisis, at least in the appropriate place and time.
Ed, we're going to spend some time. We'll go through a few questions, talk about, the perspective of resilience, and talk a little bit about the Gulf oil spill. We'll get into some other things. We're talking about farming and other things. You've written a book called, the new one's called When Heaven and Nature Sing, and it's exploring God's goals for his people in his world. And before we take a break, just say a word about using Psalm 8 kind of as your basis for this this new work.
Yeah, it's essentially a Bible study of Psalm 8 along with the Lord's Prayer. And even though I wrote the book relatively in a relatively short time last year, the material that went into it from my brain is several years in the making. And it came from the fact that Psalm 8 has one of the most powerful statements of human dominion. It says, God has put all creation under our feet. That's a very, very strong statement. And dominion is something we have to deal with because it sounds on the surface like it's God saying, you can do anything you want with my world. And he's given us the ability to do anything we want with his world, but whether that's what he intended us to do is what the real question is. So I went back and did a long a meditative kind of exploration of Psalm 8 in my own mind and my own devotional work, and came up with a couple of basic principles. One is that human dominion runs on the rails of God's dominion over us. In other words, yes, I am in charge of God's creation, but God is in charge of me. And if what I am doing in God's creation is not consistent with what God wants to do in my life and with me, then that exercise of dominion is not legitimate. It's illegal from God's point of view. So you take that basic principle that, as I put it, human dominion runs on the rails of God's dominion over us. You look at all of human society and say, how much of human dominion over creation is consistent with what God wants? And you'd have to say almost none, which is a rather earth-shattering statement. And so that leads to the next question, which is what the book is really about. How do we know what God wants? And I found in Psalm 8 three great little principles that God, or goals, that God's goals in his dominion over us are to proclaim his name, to establish his kingdom, and to provide for his people, name, kingdom, and people. And you know what was really cool, Neil? As I went through, I had developed these, name, kingdom, people, and all of a sudden, one morning, was probably in the shower because that's when most of my good ideas happen, I started to realize that what I was seeing in Psalm 8 was absolutely perfectly reflected in the Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, and give us this day our daily bread. God wants in the Lord's Prayer to proclaim his name, he wants to establish his kingdom, and he wants to provide for his people. In Psalm 8, God wants to proclaim his name, he wants to establish his kingdom, and he wants to provide for his people. And so the book sort of just draws those out and then develops six, what you might call management principles for the world based on those three principles.
And we'll get into those here as the time goes on. And want to invite our listening family, too, if you'd like to join in the conversation. We have some questions about creation care, talking about a variety of things. We'll unpack what it means a bit more about dominion. We're going to talk about, you know, how do we live and operate in God's way. The subtitle of the book is called Exploring God's Goals for His People in His World. So what does that look like practically in our homes and neighborhoods? We'll get to that and more. And your questions are welcome. 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient, you can go online, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there. You can send us a note, myfaithradio.com. Back in a minute. Twenty past the hour. Talking today with Ed Brown. Reverend Ed Brown is the director of Care of Creation. He's served as a pastor, a missionary. He's worked with the University Christian Fellowship. He's been involved in environmental studies for a number of years. Started Care of Creation here back 2005 or so. He's written a couple of books, including Our Father's World, Mobilizing the Church to Care for Creation. And the latest is called When Heaven and Nature Sing, Exploring God's Goals for His People in His World. And I think we've got two or three copies that we can give away. If you'd like to join the program today, add to our discussion, you can do so with a phone call at 877-933-2484. Ed, I wanted to talk a little bit about, I guess whether we use the word global warming or, however we talk about that. There's an idea, I guess, that we, an assumption that we can control nature. And I'm just thinking, do we have data that really supports that, that we can actually control, or maybe the better word is influence nature? How do we influence nature?
Yeah, the problem is we can't control it. We do affect it or influence it. If we could control it, then we could probably figure out how to correct for some of the influence we're having on it. This question of global warming / climate change, whatever term you want to use, remains controversial in this country, and I realize that. Many of the people who support our organization have some real questions about whether climate change is real or how important it is. I even have some family members that I have long, warm discussions with about it. But, I have to tell you that in the traveling that I've done and my own observations and the people I've talked to in my reading, I am, it's hard for me to avoid being convinced that we really have had a significant impact on the climate system, and it's going to come and bite us pretty severely in the decades ahead. Now, the fundamental philosophical question that you sort of articulated is, can we affect or can we control nature? And it's obvious in any other area that we do all the time. I mean, it's very easy to cause a river to run dry, as we've done with the rivers out in the West, because we pumped all the water out of them. It's obvious that we have the ability to pump aquifers dry. It's obvious that we have the ability to make mountains go away by, our earth-moving equipment and so on. And so it's not logical, and I don't think it's sound reasoning to say we can do all of that to the stuff that we can see and put in our hands, but we don't have an influence on the atmosphere that is right above us. The other argument along these lines that I often hear is the suggestion that God wouldn't allow us to mess up his world to the extent that the climate change people seem to be saying that we have done or that we're doing. And I just like to have someone show me a Bible verse that supports that. God does allow us to ruin our lives. He allows us to foul our nests because he has given us a measure of independence, more than he should have probably, but he did. And he just doesn't stop in. He doesn't step in to stop a drunk driver from killing a young family. He doesn't step in to stop a toxic chemical spill in China from fouling an entire river. Why would he think that he would step in to stop us from changing the climate system? There's no biblical evidence for that, and certainly history doesn't support it.
Ed, talk about there's a discussion. I think you bring it up in your book too. This a perspective on. Of resilience, we'll put it that way. I mean, think about maybe we can use the Gulf oil spill as an example. I mean, there was, severe warnings for that. Now it seems like it has recovered amazingly well. So is resilience kind of built into God's creative design?
Resilience is a great word, and it's in The literature that I'm starting to that I'm reading now, I'm starting to see this word pop up more and more, almost instead of the word sustainability. Our goal has often been sustainability. We want to create a system that will allow us to keep doing what we've been doing to sustain it. And the idea of resilience is that, no, maybe what we want to do is to build systems that that have redundancy in them so that a system can carry on and can absorb shocks. And it's absolutely true that God has created his world in this way. that it is very flexible and can absorb all kinds of shocks, all kinds of natural shocks. You know, the one of the things we say about hurricanes is that hurricanes are and typhoons are part of God's system. God put them in there. They perform some very important functions in keeping things stirred up in the ocean. But God also provided some backup systems. So when a hurricane comes ashore in a wetland, the wetland and in Asian countries, the mangrove swamps and so on, will absorb the shock. And so the hurricane comes, it's fierce for a little while, it goes away, no permanent damage is done. In fact, there's been a lot of benefit to it. What happens when human beings come in, we strip those layers of resiliency out of God's creation. We take away the mangrove swamps, we fill in the wetlands, we build the high-rise hotels right along the beach so we can have our vacations. And then the hurricane or the typhoon comes in and causes enormous damage. And we say, God, what are you doing to us? So I guess the suggestion is, I'm hearing you say, isn't God's creation resilient? Yes, it is, especially if it's operating the way God designed it to. What we've done in many cases is we've removed that resilience because we've only seen what we want to see, and that's, oh, this is a great place for a hotel, without even being aware of how important the land, the wetland is that we're filling in to build that hotel. Does that make sense?
Sure, absolutely. You know, your book, When Heaven and Nature Sing, the subtitle is Exploring God's Goals for His People in His World, and it's, you know, I think you address it, and we want to kind of, you know, unpack it a bit as we go along. But, you know, how do we understand sort of God's goals for our world, I guess, in terms of creation care? I mean, is it, you know, we've gone through kind of, I think, fluctuations between maybe no use versus wise use. I mean, is God's goals that we be good stewards, does that mean we use, or does it mean that we don't use at all?
I have a friend, Cal DeWitt, used to be my boss, who often says, God's desire is that we use and not abuse.
Hmm.
Obviously, we have to use God's creation. We live in it. We're part of it. And in fact, I don't know if you remember from my first book, I had a whole chapter on Jesus, and I called Jesus the divine consumer. And that it still strikes me when I realized, thinking about Jesus, that Jesus didn't come as a gardener. Jesus didn't come as a farmer. Jesus didn't come as a, like a, you know, a hippie to lie on the beach and enjoy God's creation. Jesus came as a carpenter. What does a carpenter do? A carpenter cuts down trees and makes things out of them. You know, Jesus was as close in his society to being what in our society might be an engineer. And there's a powerful lesson there that it's okay to use God's creation to better human life. God intends that we do that. But there is a line between cutting down a tree to build furniture and cutting down all the trees in order to get rich, you know?
Hmm.
And so it's the line between use and abuse is very, very important, and that's what stewardship means. You know, this leads to one of the important principles in the new book, and that's When Heaven and Nature Sing, the idea that God's creation, one of its great purposes is to reveal God.
Well, I think, Ed, we should hang on to that, and
okay.
Let's just come back after our short break and talk about what it means that creation reveals God and how do we be a part of that. And we'll invite our listeners to join in the conversation as well at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Reverend Ed Brown's my guest today. He's Executive Director of Care of Creation, Inc., and there's more just ahead. Psalm 19 reminds us that the heavens declare the glory of God, and there's no place in this earth where the evidence of God's handiwork is not seen. And we're talking a little bit about how God reveals himself in creation. Talking creation care today with Ed Brown. Reverend Ed Brown is the board chair and executive director of Care Creation. It's out of Madison, Wisconsin. Ed's written a couple of books, including Our Father's World, Mobilizing the Church to Care for Creation. And we'll I'll get into a little bit more about mobilization here before our time is gone. His latest is called When Heaven and Nature Sing, Exploring God's Goals for His People in His World. And Ed, you were just starting to talk a little bit about how we, how God reveals Himself in creation. Let's just talk a bit more about that so we have a better understanding of God's designs and purpose.
Sure. Before we do that, I should, in case any of my board members are listening, I'm not board chair. I'm just executive director.
All right. We'll.
I have a board chair who keeps a very close eye on
okay.
me.
Okay. Right. We'll.
Which is necessary.
We still like you, even though you're not board chair, Ed. Just want you to know. So, right.
Okay. Well, you recall that I in Psalm 8 I pulled out three principles. God wants to proclaim His name. He wants to establish His kingdom. He wants to provide for His people. And out of that, that He wants to proclaim His name, I drew two management principles. The first is very obvious and goes to basic fundamental Christianity. In a world that reflects God's goals, God's people will be energetically and effectively making God's name known, personally and corporately, with activities directed back to God, prayer and worship, and directed to those who do not yet believe, evangelism. So we put that principle in there basically to avoid anyone trying to say that in promoting creation care, we are somehow wandering away from worship and evangelism. We are not. We're reinforcing it. Because principle number two then says, in a world that reflects God's goals, all human activity will proclaim God's name by working in harmony with and contributing to the flourishing of non-human creation. What I've learned and seen over my years of reading and studying this material is that when God made the world, He made it as a way of expressing Himself and His nature in 3D, visibly. And we can go into how DNA works. The DNA is a language, and the scientist Francis Collins once called DNA the language by which God spoke life into being. There's just so many connections between the world of science and how we understand biology now, and what we know in the Bible about how God proclaims His name through nature and so on. Now, if this is true, and God wants His name proclaimed, and one of the ways He does is in nature, then every time we diminish nature, we're turning down the volume on God's proclamation of His name, and that's terrible. We should be amplifying it, not diminishing it. But, when we take a meadow and we cover it with a parking lot, the meadow proclaimed God's name. The parking lot does not, even if the parking lot's in front of a church. I'm sorry, but that's just... And so this puts creation care in an entirely new light, because it becomes part of our work of evangelism is to see that everywhere people turn in God's world, they will be confronted with Him through nature. And we've got, as Christians, have got to take that seriously. This is part of our mission of proclamation, is to proclaim His name through helping His creation to flourish.
Mm. And working in harmony for the flourishing of creation. It's a good way to put it. Talk about then, because I know in the book you address, farming God's way. And so maybe we can talk about that. But let's jump into, what would coal mining or drilling for oil or harvesting timber, how would that be done in alignment with the flourishing of creation?
Well, some of these things probably ought not to be done if we want nature to flourish. But some things have to be done. Like, obviously, we've got to have food to eat, which means we've got to farm. And the program you refer to is actually a program that I should have mentioned at the beginning. While I do the work of care creation here in the U.S., we have two projects overseas. One is in Kenya, and the other is beginning in Tanzania. In Kenya, we have some... a couple from the Twin Cities, actually, Craig and Tracy Sorley. Mm-hmm. The Sorley family is well known to your listeners in the Minneapolis area for several generations of missionary work now. Yeah. Craig is the director of Care of Creation Kenya and works with me, and actually he's a co-founder of Care of Creation. We started this organization together back in 2005. And Craig has become a recognized expert in East Africa on this program called Farming God's Way, the basic principle of which is we ought to manage our farms the way God would. And in some ways, if when you take the program apart, it's what scientists here would call conservation no-till agriculture, that is, farming without plowing, and with heavy use of organic compost and so on. We won't get into the details here, but it's conservation agriculture, but it's presented and wrapped in an African faith language. It's presented as a program of discipleship where the Kenyan farmers are taught that God is the first farmer, that they don't own their field, God owns their field. And that, therefore, they have, because they're children of God, they have an obligation to care for God's field as God wants them to care for it. And then we pull biblical principles about hard work and discipline and doing things in an orderly manner and this sort of thing. And then teach them how to farm with this organic compost. When you put a layer of organic compost on the field, you're putting God's blanket on God's field and not taking it off. And then you drill holes to plant the crops through the organic compost in the soil. The result is a process by which the soil gets more fertile every year and yields go up every year. And we've seen documented increases of 200, 400, even 800% over normal methods of farming in that part of the world, which would be for us here like being told that you could double or quadruple or multiply your salary by 8 times, since what comes off that field represents the farmer's income for the entire year. So Farming God's Way is a very exciting program. What I did in the book was I described the program briefly, and I said, okay, if farming the way God wants us to works, I wonder how running a factory the way God wants us to might work, running a school the way God wants us to, running a business. What would it like if we look like if we ran the whole world the way God wants us to run the world? And that's the launching point for the book,
which is a pretty powerful question. Let's pick it up maybe for those that aren't, you know, part of the agriculture process. So we're living in the suburbia. What does it look like for our life at home in our neighborhoods?
Okay, well, that's where we'd actually go right into some of the other principles that are developed in the book. For example, principle number 4, in a world that reflects God's goals, every human being will be able to live a life that is physically healthy and intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually rich and fulfilling. So what I wrestle with at times is that in our world we have one class of people, mostly poor, who work outdoors and get more than they want of God's creation, but have no opportunity to stimulate their minds or to develop their spirit, the spiritual nature that God also gave them. While we have another entire class of people, knowledge workers, which can be well off or can be poor, who spend entire days working in cubicles, staring at screens, working in call centers, who never see God's creation. In fact, in our part of the world, they go to work when it's dark and come home when it's dark. So what we have is a problem at both ends. We have one group of people that have work out in nature but have no opportunity to develop their minds, and another group that work with their minds all day long but have no opportunity to be out in nature. Now, that's a big picture kind of question. How do we change the world so that a balanced experience is available to all of us? And it's hard when we just say, okay, I'm living in suburbia, I have a job I have to go to, what am I going to do in my own life? And I think we just have to start small.
Well, let me ask you, Ed, too, I think sometimes we wonder, does starting small make a difference? I mean, you know, we can recycle, we can turn down our thermostat in terms of, you know, conservation, but we can step outside a bit more and breathe some fresh air and watch the birds. But, give us a sense that you know, those small steps are worthwhile and valuable.
Oh, absolutely. You know, what comes into play here is what is sometimes called the law of large numbers. Okay, if I decide to drive my car so I get 10% better gas mileage, or I decide to change my habits so I drive 10% less miles in a month, which would come to the same thing, you know, maybe I save $20 in a month. I'm just pulling a figure out of the air here. What, you know, $20 is $20, yes, but is that going to change the world? But if 100 million people use 10% less gasoline, or 100 million people use 10% less electricity, 10% of 100 million electric bills is huge savings of energy. It's enormous. You know, when the markets look at gasoline consumption went down by 1%, that's huge. So if it went down by 10%, it would be enormous. So even though each one of us is only one, if lots and lots of us do small things, it makes a big difference. That's one thing. The other thing is that we have to realize that for those of us, especially our parents who have kids at home, starting them off on the right track by getting them out in nature, by helping them to experience God in his world and that kind of thing, I mean, that is changes of life pattern that makes enormous difference to those kids, and it really doesn't matter if it changes the world or not, you know, because you are enriching the life of the two or three or four little lives that God put under your control, your care. And that's worthwhile all by itself.
Good insight from Ed Brown today. Ed comes our way out of Madison, Wisconsin. He's been in the area of environmental studies for a number of years. He also has been a pastor. He's worked for University Christian Fellowship. He has a Master's of Divinity degree from Gordon-Conwell Seminary. He grew up in Pakistan as children of missionaries. He's written a couple of books, Our Father's World, Mobilizing the Church to Care for Creation, and When Heaven and Nature Sing, Exploring God's Goals for His People in His World. We've got a couple of copies I'd love to pass on to you. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do that with a phone call at 877-933-2484, or you can always go online and connect with us that way. It's myfaithradio.com, and then just click on the Connecting Faith show page. And we'll talk a few more principles with Ed Brown coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned. It's Fernando Ortega. Nice tune called Creation Song. We're talking creation today, talking about care of creation. And thanks to Ed Brown for joining us today. I also appreciate Ed's perspective. Among other things, as Executive Director of Care of Creation, he's also heading up the Lausanne Committee's creation care, I guess, track, would maybe put it that way, and recently was part of a global summit talking creation care and how it fits with our faith perspective and what it means to be a follower of Christ and be a good steward of the world that God has placed us in. Carecreation.org is the website, by the way, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But Ed, we're touching on your latest book called When Heaven and Nature Sing, Exploring God's Goals for His People in His World, and looking at both Psalm 8 and the Lord's Prayer. But we talked about a few kind of principles, and we were talking about principle number four. Let's maybe just do a couple more here before our time gets away, but general principles to understand our role in caring for creation.
Sure, happy to. And we probably ought to mention the book is actually being released next week. It's available now in Kindle on Amazon. The actual paperbacks we hope to have in our office and shipping out next week. People can go to the website shop.careofcreation.net and click on special offers to get a pre-release price of just $8 for this book. So shop.careofcreation.net. Click on special offers. Okay, principle number five. In a world that reflects God's goals, every human being will understand that he or she is created in God's image and will be treated as such a person deserves to be treated. And this comes out of some of the material in the middle of the psalm about that that God has crowned us with glory and honor, and the glory and honor, as I understand the psalm, is the Imago Dei, God's image. He has given us His image, and it's an important part of human development that we grow up understanding that we are creatures created in God's image and learn how to live accordingly. And so we need a world where the educational system communicates to children that you are special because you're born in God's image. You're created in God's image, but also that image carries some responsibilities with it, which actually leads to principle number 6. In a world that reflects God's goals, every person will understand that he or she shares responsibility for ruling God's world, and will have the opportunity to exercise that responsibility in his or her own life. So, I guess what I was led to see in doing this study is that as we human beings look at our own little lives, we have to realize that in my own particular small or large sphere of influence, however big or small it might be, my responsibility is to exercise godly dominion in that little piece of God's creation. And this means applying these principles in that area, whether I'm a mom who stays home with my kids, and so I'm trying to help my kids to grow up with an understanding of their imageness, each one of them carries is an image bearer for God, helping them to understand that how they live, that they have an exciting job to do in their life in exercising dominion along with the rest of us over God's creation and what that means and so on. This kind of thing, can be very liberating and help all of us to have a sense that what we do matters. Whether I'm the mom at home, whether I'm the head of a multinational corporation, I am involved with God in helping to run the world God's way, if I choose to look at my job that way.
Just thinking,
make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just thinking how worldview makes such a difference in how we care for the earth, doesn't it? I mean, we think about the countries that have some major problems, and I know we like to pride ourselves, and probably rightfully so, that we've taken some good steps in our nation, as a nation, in terms of creation care. But there are many places in the world that this doesn't take place at all.
Yeah, and even in our country, it's a constant struggle to see that we are, maintaining the, we started off great back in the, early 20th century with Teddy Roosevelt, establishing the national park system and so on. In the 1970s, we had some wonderful advances in terms of legislation and new agencies to help us clean up our rivers and clean up the air and preserve the land for future generations and so on. It's a battle that has to be fought in every generation. But even so, you're absolutely right that there are aspects of the way the U.S. has managed our piece of God's creation that can be an example for other countries. There are other ways in which we have, and those other countries, Haiti, Kenya, the Philippines, are suffering under tremendous burdens of poverty and large increases in human population, decimation of wildlife. In some ways, we have to be careful because there are some examples of where we have exported environmental problems. Maybe we don't deforest here, but we are guilty of deforesting in Southeast Asia because the fancy wood that we use for our wood furniture comes from there, or the wood that we need for paper comes from there, and so the rainforests get deforested on our behalf, and so that somehow makes us a little bit complicit in that. It's a complicated question.
Your book, previous book's called Our Father's World, Mobilizing the Church to Care for Creation. Just say a word about mobilization and what that would look like if we could see more than just us as individuals become engaged.
The reason I chose the word mobilize is because it has a military connotation. It has a sense of mission attached to it. but also because the word mobilize means to move out stuff, resources that are already there. You're not manufacturing the equipment that the Army needs. You're just moving it out of the warehouse and putting it in the hands of the troops so the troop can be mobilized. And so why should we mobilize the church in particular for creation care? And that goes back to my understanding of what the core problem with the environmental crisis is. And that is that it's a spiritual problem. One of the phrases that I'll sometimes use is environmental problems are sin problems because they can be directly tied to us living sinful lives and living sinfully. And if we don't manage the problem of sin, we cannot manage the problem of abuse of God's creation. Now, how are we going to manage the problem of sin? There's only one way to do that, and that's through redemption that comes through Jesus, which is the purview of the church. The bottom line of this whole chain of arguments is if the church doesn't get involved in dealing with issues involving creation care, the problems are not going to be solved because governments can't solve sin, policies can't solve sin, money can't solve sin, only the gospel can solve sin, and if you don't solve sin, you can't solve the environmental crisis.
Given
so
that,
don't let anyone say I'm not a conservative evangelical. My creation care rests entirely on my conviction that there is only one solution to sin, and that's in the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Well, given that understanding, that framework, it's easy to probably to be less than optimistic, perhaps, as our world seems to traffic more in sin than the gospel. Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
Oh, I wish you wouldn't ask me that,
okay.
Neil.
We should have stopped the show a couple minutes ago, apparently. So, yes.
It is really hard. There are times when something optimistic will happen, I'll think maybe we can pull this off. But here's how the bottom line that I come down to, and that's if you think of God's creation as if it were one of your loved ones who is extremely sick, okay? And the doctors have done everything they can, and now they're saying to you, you know, it's going to be hit or miss for the next 24 hours. If your loved one makes it until tomorrow morning, you're probably going to be okay. What do you do at that point? You've done everything you can, and so you pray. And you get all your friends to pray, and you call your pastor. And often, you know, God steps in and works through the hands of the doctors and so on, and that person does pull through, not always, but sometimes. I think we need to think of what's happening in God's creation like that, that God's creation is really quite sick, and there are things we can do. You know, we can change how we manufacture things. We can change how we use energy. We can try to clean up the pollution spills and that sort of thing. Is it enough? No. But can God step in and work through the hands of environmental engineers and work through the hands and feet of those who plant trees in Kenya and work through the efforts of those who are trying to design new ways of using energy so that we abuse God's creation less? I think he can. And so part of this may be a call to the young people out there who are considering a career in something having to do with environment to go for it and to see this as a way of serving God, because we need Christians who are in these careers who, like a doctor, will feel like they are God's hands and feet to seek to heal his creation.
Well, our time is gone, but it's been a great discussion. Ed Brown, my guest, he's the Executive Director of Care of Creation. You can find out more about their great resources online, careofcreation.org. And if you missed part of the program today, we always put it up in the podcast. You can share with a friend as well. Ed, always good to visit with you. Thanks so much.